Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Beautiful people, welcome to this Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is April 6th, 2021, and I gotta say, folks, I am completely stunned still. Still, you know, it's it hasn't been even a full day, so, you know, I'll see how I feel, you know, when I hit the 24 mark period. In what was last night's, when it comes to last night's national championship men's college basketball game between Gonzaga and Baylor, because I really thought that we were going to witness history. I really thought that finally, for the first time in a long time, we were going to see an undefeated national champion be crowned. And it seemed like destiny to me. Jalen Suggs doing what he did on Saturday night against UCLA. You know, hitting that game winner in overtime. I thought this has to be destiny. But mad props to the Baylor Bears. Because I don't think I have ever seen college basketball defense like that. You know, and I tweeted that out last night on my Twitter feed, and I immediately got a response from my former intern. You guys know him very well, Jack Kerwin. And Jack hit me up and said, yeah, Al, you know, the only thing that I can probably bring up is when we traveled to the Final Four and witnessed what Texas Tech did to Michigan State. And that's so true. And I even think that it was a notch above that, though. What Baylor was able to do against Zaga, against the Zags, that was just suffocating, in your face, earn everything, give you nothing kind of defense. I mean, it was remarkable. And, you know, from start, folks, this thing got out of hand. As soon as the ball was tipped, Baylor was in its bag, and Gonzaga completely looked intimidated to me. The Zags looked like they had seen a ghost. There wasn't even a lot of emotion. You know, when you get pumped up throughout a game and you're trying to encourage your teammates, and, you know, you may score a bucket and say, let's go. There wasn't any of that even going on. You know, after a bucket, you know, that the Zags were fortunate to get, they would run back on defense like in panic, like, okay, how do we slow them down now? Because it wasn't just a one side of the ball domination here last night. No, Baylor was also fantastic offensively. They are the total package, man. And I, like many of you, overlooked that. Completely overlooked that. So on today's Current Sports, we, of course, are breaking down what happened last night in that national championship game. And a pretty simple show. Later on as well, we've got some more spring practice Michigan State football media availability action for you guys. Chris Kapilovic, who is the assistant head coach and offensive line coach, also run game coordinator. He holds three different titles for Mel Tucker and his coaching staff. You'll hear what Chris has to say about the preparation of Michigan State football throughout the spring. So we'll get to that later. But again, you know, let's just talk about the centerpiece of the show right now, and that is Baylor just completely overwhelming Gonzaga. It was an 86-70 pummeling of the Bulldogs on Monday at Lucas Oil Stadium. And goodness, man, you know, the buildup to that game on Monday, it favored Gonzaga because, you know, Gonzaga, they hadn't lost a game all year. Had not lost a game all year. And in many ways, it reminds me of when the New England Patriots were, like, undefeated the entire season, right? And then they get all the way to the Super Bowl. And just like, you just say, what in the world? You know what I mean? Unbeaten going into the Super Bowl, and, you know, the Giants ended up winning that game. It's hard, man. It is so hard. I think, you know, if you didn't know how hard it was, last night proved yet again just how hard it is to go undefeated for an entire year and end up as the champion of all champs. It just normally doesn't happen. The kind of mental focus, the kind of hurdles that you have to dodge, the kind of luck that you have to have. And in many ways, look, you would be a fool not to question Gonzaga's schedule now. Because, look, and look, you can argue the other way and say, Al, well, look, there aren't many teams like Baylor. True. But looking at Gonzaga's schedule, they didn't play many defensive powerhouses on that schedule, folks. They just didn't. You know, you look at the regular season, you know, Kansas, we all know how Kansas did this year. West Virginia. Then they had a slew of cancellations due to COVID. They had like 5 straight cancellations. And like the only ranked teams that they played after the break due to COVID were Iowa. And they ended up, of course, they won that game. I mean, they won all these games except the national championship, but after the cancellation, they beat Iowa, which was at the time ranked the number 3 team in the nation, and they also beat number 16 Virginia. But other than that, they did not play a ranked opponent the rest of the season up until the tournament. Isn't that something? So you had Kansas, West Virginia, who they beat. So two ranked teams there. Then you have a COVID break. And look, let's be real. Kansas and West Virginia turned out to be not that great. Then after the break, you play Iowa and Virginia, and that's it. Everybody else unranked. You would be a fool not to question that schedule for Gonzaga. And did they have some big wins throughout the tournament? Yeah, sure. Come on. I mean, you know, Oklahoma was no walk in the park. Creighton was a 5 seed. USC and the Mobley brothers, they were a great team in the tournament. And UCLA, they weren't an 11 seed. That was a much higher seed than an 11 seed. Sure, they played in the first 4 game against Michigan State, but that was a much better team. So, and that's what convinced me. I mean, I looked at that postseason run, and I thought to myself, okay, this is what Gonzaga is. They find ways to win. You know, Drew Timmy, Jalen Suggs, love those two players. How can you slow them down? Well, Baylor had the answer. Just suffocating defense, guys. I mean, watching that, you know, you basketball coaches out there, you basketball coach alert, please chop up clips of that game and show your young men and women how to defend, because that was a clinic. They put on a clinic last night. Active hands, not even giving you space just to look and just evaluate the court. Just sitting there and just writing your grill. I like the line that Kenny the Jet Smith had at the half when they were showing the highlights, where he said, 6 feet? No, man. He says something like, you know, 6 feet for COVID? Social distancing? No. Not when it comes to Baylor. Because, yeah, they didn't, even when you're just sitting up there setting up to play, you know, some teams will give you space and just be there. No, they're in your grill. They were in your grill for an entirety of 40 minutes of play. Just waving hands in your face, right up there in your shorts, forcing you to make bad decisions. And that's exactly what happened in that game last night. I mean, it's unreal. I mean, you look at that footage and it's like, whew. You know, and then Jared Butler, who was named as the most outstanding player last night, the Final Four most outstanding player, he scored 22 points, drained 4 3-pointers. He was amazing in the way he orchestrated things, you know, and you know, getting in the paint from time to time and making the right pass or killing you with a floater or hitting you with one of those 4 threes. Oh, man. And look, the Zags shot 51% from the field, but they just couldn't overcome their turnovers, man. I mean, they had 14 turnovers. 14 turnovers. And you look at some of those turnovers, and they were just like, they were because of Baylor's defense. You know, Drew Timmy a couple of times just trying to split two defenders and ends up on the ground and just throws the ball away. Or you see one of the Gonzaga guards just can't handle the basketball the way they want to because a Baylor, you know, defender is right there, and then they just throw it away to Baylor, and then it's a fast break opportunity. I mean, it was unreal. And then if Baylor did put up a shot, because you just needed some stops. I mean, you saw at the half, Gonzaga was able to trim it to like 10 or 11 points. But, you know, and Charles Barkley brought up this, Clark Kellogg brought up this, that, you know, once you do get a stop, possessions are so precious when you are down to a quality team like Baylor. You can't allow Baylor to get up second and third chance opportunities because they're crashing the boards and getting offensive rebounds. You can't allow that. And Baylor's second chance opportunities, I mean, my goodness, man, they had 16 offensive rebounds, for goodness sake. That's 16 second chance points. I mean, how insane is that? So you times that by two, that's 32 possible points on the board. I mean, goodness gracious. And they were just, they're just so hot from three. And that's the point I made when previewing this game yesterday, is I really thought that, you know, it was going to be Gonzaga controlling everything. I thought it was going to be the Zags going out to this solid lead, not Baylor. And the point I made on yesterday's Current Sports was that Baylor shooting, they shoot so well, the best three-point shooting team in the tournament. Because of that, you know, you could never count them out. If they get down by double digits, you can't count them out because they can shoot so well and they can shoot their way back into the game. But they did not need to shoot their way back into the game because they led wire to wire. Unreal. The Bears made 44% of their three-pointers. And they won just about every individual matchup. It was one of the most complete and impressive runs that we have ever seen in the NCAA tournament. And again, to show you just how difficult this is, Gonzaga became the 15 since 1976 to enter the tournament with an undefeated record and fail to win the title. Five teams have done that, where they have gone all the way, undefeated, unblemished record. No one in that loss column entering the national championship game, the creme de la creme of all games. And five have failed now. It's tough, man. That is very, very tough. And, you know, right now, you know, ESPN always kills me with this notification after the college basketball national championship game is said and done. It's like, you know, literally like minutes after one shining moment. You know, minutes after Luther Vandross is done doing his thing, you know, I get this notification on my phone. Early odds for the champion of next year's college basketball season. And looking at next year, Gonzaga is actually the betting favorite to win it all next year. So, yeah. William Hill posted the Bulldogs at plus 550. And newly crowned champ Baylor is the second favorite at plus 850. So there you have that. But, you know, you also have, let's see here, joining Gonzaga and Baylor are UCLA at 12-1 odds, Michigan, so Juwan Howard's Wolverines at 14-1 odds, Duke at 15-1 odds, Kansas at 18-1 odds, Kentucky 18-1, and Florida State 18-1. So, yeah, there you have that. And I'm curious, man. You know, I guess, look, if I'm Jalen Suggs, I'm out. You know, Jalen Suggs, standout freshman guard for Mark Few and the Bulldogs. He's projected among the top few picks. He is expected to declare, you know, I see most early NBA draft predictions. They have him going like number three. So interesting, though, you know, UCLA sophomore guard Johnny Juzang, who made a lot of noise throughout the tournament, former Kentucky recruit. He did not appear on draft boards until that Final Four run. And now he may be a lottery pick. Isn't that amazing? That's how precious the NCAA tournament is, because you can go from not being on anybody's radar, but if you have a solid run in the tournament, you can turn a lot of heads and you can cause a lot of NBA personnel to say, we may have something here. Isn't that incredible? You know, Johnny Juzang, he was not on draft boards, folks, but now he may be a top 10 pick, top 15 pick, top 20 pick. Who knows? Incredible. And that's why, you know, losing last year, you know, the tournament last year, not to continue to bring this up, but, you know, I just think about Michigan State, man, because that team was clicking. It wasn't like this year. This year's squad was incredibly inconsistent. It was a roller coaster. They were up and then down and, you know, are they going to make the tournament? No, they're not going to make the tournament. I mean, just so much uncertainty in so many frustrating performances. You know, thank goodness for those final 2 weeks of regular season action. But, and then looking back at it too, I mean, they did push a Final Four team to overtime in that loss against UCLA, right? But that was like the emergence of Johnny Juzang. But I just think about Cassius Winston, man. You know, I think about, you know, Cash, because, you know, he's one of the greatest men's basketball players ever to wear the green and white. And, you know, now he's with the Wizards and you know, he's on a two-way contract with the Capital City Go-Go of the NBA G League. Wasn't drafted. in the NBA draft. And I just think, man, if Michigan State had a remarkable run, you know, if there was a team or two out there that would have given him a chance and drafted him in the draft. So, but the thing about him is he's undersized, but he's so smart. That's what I love about the game of Cassius Winston. So, but, you know, he's trying to grind it out, man. And he is trying to become a player in the NBA. So, really interesting stuff there, man. But, yeah, Johnny Juzang, man, you know, a lot of people think that he just earned himself a lottery pick, you know, with his play. He was just amazing. Amazing. So, a great, great year, though. I do want to tip my cap, despite the loss. Let's tip our cap to Gonzaga. It's not easy to go undefeated up until that championship game. But, man, you got to give Baylor a lot of credit. You know, a lot of people were looking at Baylor as a really sexy pick, actually. And, you know, I'm a bit down today because I'm in a pool of like 30 plus people, and I was leading. It's a pick 'em pool. So what happens is you make your pick before each and every round begins throughout the tournament. And I was leading the pack with the most correct picks. And the national championship game is worth 6 points. So, you know, you can enter the final night of the pool leading. But if you get that pick wrong and those behind you get it right, they can leapfrog you, depending on, you know, the margin of lead that you have. And I had, I think, you know, I had like an 87, and the closest guy next to me had like an 83 or an 84. So if they chose Baylor, if they chose the Bears, they may have leapfrogged me. I haven't gotten the final standings just yet, but, man, that hurts me. If they did, that's going to hurt, because I was watching that game and I'm yelling at the TV. You know, you watch things differently, right? And this is how those who have indulged in legalized sports betting now here in the state of Michigan, you guys know, when you got some cheese on the game, you are more involved in the game. It changes the way you watch the game. And honestly, it makes it more fun. You know, it makes a Wednesday night, you know, I don't know, Denver Nuggets game against the Trailblazers that much more exciting. You know, you don't have any dog in the race. You're not a fan of either one of those teams. But if you got a little bit of cheese on it, it's like, okay, I'm invested here because my moolah is invested literally in this game. So it just changes how you watch things, man. So, yeah, it's a fun pool, though, and I'm just waiting for the standings to come out just to see. I'm hoping that those behind me who were within reach of the lead didn't go with Baylor, but that's wishful thinking. Oh, boy. And it's crazy, man. You know, and I'm in the bracket challenge as well with my fraternity brothers, and a brother who I didn't think had any chance of coming back and winning, he actually won the whole thing last night because he had Baylor winning the national championship. Talk about coming up in the clutch. So, but I'm curious if you guys have any crazy stories like that, you know, leading into last night's national championship game. If you had the Bears or you had the Zags and because you chose correctly or incorrectly, there was a major outcome that happened that left you on the winning end or losing end of things. I would love to hear from you guys. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can leave us a voicemail at that number. You can also comment on our Facebook pages at facebook.com/WKAR News. Comment anywhere there. You can also tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR, or you can tweet the show at WKAR News. All right. So multiple ways in which you can weigh in there. All right. Yeah, man. College basketball, thank you for an amazing, amazing tournament. And look, I was also wrong about this. The COVID situation that in the numbers seem to be going up now. Health experts seem a bit split on whether or not we are going to see a fourth wave. But, You know, if you haven't been watching the news, Michigan, that's right, this state right here that we are living in is now the epicenter of the coronavirus. Isn't that crazy? And now there's this double mutant variant that has been discovered. And the only way to combat this thing is continue to do what we've been doing, mask up, social distance, and, of course, get vaccinated. So I hope you guys are on that. But one thing I was majorly wrong about was the impact that COVID was going to have on the NCAA tournament. For the most part, look, we only had one cancellation. That was it, man. You know, that sent VCU packing. But shout out to the NCAA tournament, which I don't give a lot of props to usually, but they had that bubble airtight, apparently, because we didn't see a lot of players have to sit out because of COVID. We only saw one cancellation because of COVID. Everybody was safe. It's amazing. And the players were disciplined. They stayed on their respective hotel floor, didn't go out. Incredibly disciplined. It was amazing watching that, man. So I was wrong about that. I was wrong about a lot of stuff. I'm human. What can you say? I'm human. I really thought we were going to see at least five cancellations because of COVID. But I underestimated just how well organized that bubble was. I mean, even you heard the announcers like Ernie Johnson and Andy Katz and Charles and Kenny. They were talking about how, you know, when they leave, they got to go straight to their hotel room. They can't go out and mingle at all. Even them, they had to stay incredibly disciplined throughout the tournament to make sure that this thing went off without a hitch. And it did for the most part, folks, with the exception of one contest. That's it. Amazing. All right, well, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll have Michigan State spring practice media availability. You'll hear from assistant head coach Chris Kapilovic when we come back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We've got Michigan State spring football media availability. And I want to roll in Chris Kapilovic's media availability. Chris Kapilovic is the assistant head coach, offensive line coach, and run game coordinator of the Michigan State football team. Here's what he had to say about the preparation for the Spartans throughout spring ball.
First, I apologize for being late. That we typically don't have impromptu meetings here, but it happened, so I apologize for that. And yeah, it's the big word's competition. We definitely have some competition in our room, which is huge for growth and success. And that's something that I didn't feel like we had that across the board in the fall. And so, you know, there's, and I've told them this at the start of spring ball, in my mind, through our workouts, I see multiple guys that can start at each position. So there's nobody that's coming out here in this practice that has the job won. And it's critical that they understand that, because, you know, you'd like to think every person, every player is going to just give everything they got every day, but it's human nature to get complacent at times. But when you know that if there's a guy behind you that can take your job and you don't have a good day, that's going to motivate you even more. And that's really what we're trying to get to here.
And maybe forgive me for some speculation possibly on my part, but with both tackles coming back and you bringing in Jarrett Horst and Kevin having the ability to play right guard where he started for 2 years, I guess, is there that potential to maybe look and move, you know, Kevin back inside? Or I guess what's the outlook with tackle? Because you guys do have more returning depth at the interior spots, it seems.
Yeah, there's definitely a possibility of that, you know, and you know, I know it sounds like coach speak sometimes, but really you're trying to find the five best guys and then plug them in where you can. You know, obviously there's some guys that can't play tackle just because of their dimensions, but there's definitely some tackles that can move into guard. And so that's definitely a possibility. If we got three tackles that are three of the best five guys and we need to move one in and do that, we definitely can do that.
Thanks, Chris.
Yep. Our next question is from Chris Solari with the Detroit Free Press.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you. Wondering kind of if you could break down two things. One, what you saw in kind of the recruitment process of Jarrett Horst to bring him in from across the divisions. And also, if there's any insight into Jordan Reed's decision to not come back.
Well, first with Jarrett, you know, it's interesting. And his old line coach, Arkansas State, who was there, is somebody I've worked with before. So I did have some – once he went into the portal, it was nice to have an inside knowledge there on what he's about. But you saw that on film pretty quickly, what he's about. And, you know – finding those kinds of guys and those tackles, you know, it's a premium. And there's a reason why he was in the portal and he was offered by Texas immediately. And then you had OU and Florida State and the people like that. You know, everybody jumping in there because those guys are hard to find. And he played at a high level at Arkansas State. You know, he plays with an edge. He finishes blocks, which you love to see because not all old linemen play that way naturally. And so, you know, he also – he's got 2 years, could possibly have 3 years. So those are all were all pluses, I thought, for him to come in here and compete for a job and add to our depth. And I felt pretty good off the film I saw and the people I talked to. You know, his head coach there, Blake Anderson, and with Utah State, we worked together for 6 years. So I did have some good knowledge on him. So that made me feel better. Sometimes you recruit these transfers and it's so fast, you don't really know how much you know about them. But I was obviously able to talk to some people and feel like I trusted them. Jordan Reed, you know, Jordan, he was definitely set to come back, and that was his thought process. And, you know, he graduated, and I just think as time went on, he just felt in his mind, it was time for him to get in the workforce and start his career. And, you know, I guess the burning desire to play in the NFL that maybe some kids have wasn't the same for him. You know, taking care of his body and doing the different things. You know, he wanted to just kind of jump in there. And, you know, I got to respect that. You know, we would have loved to have had him and had a chance to work with him. But I respect the decision he made. And, you know, he came here and, you know, your first goal when you come to college is to get your degree. And he did that. And so, you know, and you know, I wish him the best, obviously, and hope that he'll, you know, stay in touch with us and come around and all that good stuff.
Next question is from Lindsay Huddleston.
Hey, Coach, you kind of touched on it in your last answer. With the portal being a new experience for everyone, you get players, they have some great things, some great upside, but how do you plan on dealing with some of the things that are not in your coaching philosophy? I mean, in the perfect world, you get a kid as a freshman and you can grow him and mold him, but now you get a kid that may display some great pros, but there may be some cons that come out. And how do you plan on addressing that and dealing with that going forward?
Well, that's a good question. You know, it's one thing if you get a transfer that's a freshman or sophomore, and it's another one if you get a senior. When I was at North Carolina, I had a couple seniors. I had the one kid was a 3-year starter at Florida at center, Cam Dillard. He's actually a Michigan kid, and he transferred in. And then I had Khalil Rogers who came in from SC. So you don't have a lot of time to necessarily develop them exactly in what you want. But – you know, you get this, it's great getting them now. You got the off season. You know, you as a coach maybe have a little more flexibility. And if this works for him, then that's okay. At the end of the day, you want your guys to get the job done. So even I as a coach sometimes have to be flexible, even with any guy I bring in. If this technique works better for him than it does the kid next to him, then that's what I have to do. So first thing, you know, is obviously they got to learn the system. So that's number one. They got to learn the communication. So there's no give there. Then when you start going into technique, there's certain techniques I teach that there is no negotiation. And so we're going to put all the time we need to get it done. And then there may be some things that they do that are a little bit different, but if it's working for them, then there's no reason for me to change it. And that's the best way. If this kid's better than the other guys, it's my job to find a way to make him comfortable where he can play and excel. And that's kind of how I look at it.
Great. Thank you.
Our next question is from Jim Comperoni with Spartan Magazine.
Hey, Chris, thanks for taking time out to do this with us. We really appreciate it. Hey, you mentioned earlier that there's more competition across the board at this point, maybe than there was in the fall. Can you give us a name or two that maybe have risen up from the reserve level that have helped create that competition that have been on the rise thus far through the winter or the spring?
Well, you know, I don't, as far as risen up, it's probably a little hard because, you know, our first day of pads are tomorrow.
Okay.
You just take for granted, or you look at the instance of Matt Allen starting center of the first game. He hurt his foot, missed the season. Nick Samak started the rest of the season. So now they're both back. Well, there you go. There's great competition. You got two returning guys that have started that both want to own that job. You got a guy like Buter, who him and JD both started games. Buter got hurt after game two and really didn't get back to himself throughout the rest of the season. So now you got two guys that started games that are competing there. You know, like I said, you bring a Jared Horst in and that adds competition to tackle. I do feel like a Spencer Brown is improving, which is very important for us at tackle. And so, and you know, the young kids like an Ethan Boyd that's just here, I know there's going to be a maturation process for him. I just want him to start understanding the fundamentals and go from there. But, you know, you take a Matt Carrick, you got a guy like Jarvis that could play guard and tackle. So now you got competition really both places. So just from guys getting playing time that they didn't necessarily have is creating that competition.
Sure. AJR Curry has come back. He's a guy that's kind of stair-stepped through his progression as he's gotten older. What do you see for the next level of development for him? What can he improve upon, and how excited are you to have him back?
You know, I'm really happy to have him back. I really feel like he may have improved the most of anybody last season, from where he was when we started fall camp to where we finished the season. And, you know, he's still got a lot of work and he knows that. And he works his tail off. I mean, he's a great kid. He's humble. He works. I mean, when he walks off the bus, that's what you want him to look like. There's no question about that. And so I just think he's got to continue to progress in his pass protection part of the game. You know, his physicality in the run game, and those are things really. The O-line world, it's you can throw on an NFL tape, and those guys are still trying to figure out. You're still working at getting better at technique and doing those things. That's a constant strive for perfection, you know. And so he wants to get his whole game amped up. But I really feel like he's made some strides and improved, and I'm hoping that that continues throughout the spring and summer.
All right, one more, if I may. James Ohanba is a guy that got into the playing group a little bit on special teams last year, caught the eye of some fans out there because hadn't seen much from him, and all of a sudden he's on the field. Tell me how he's coming along and the progress he made last fall and where he is at this point.
Yeah, James also progressed, and James got a little playing time at guard, which was good. You know, he got a chance to be out there and you know, taste it as you will. And so now he's out there and he's running with the twos and competing for a starting job. And again, another guy with the physical tools that you want. You know, he's really transformed his body from what he was when he got here to where he is now. And I really think if James just finds a way to continue to improve, that he's a guy that can help us at some point this year in his career. So, you know, he's one that I'm keeping an eye on, pushing daily, because I do see some things in him that I think he can help us.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Our next question is from Rainer Saban with the Detroit Free Press.
Hi, Chris. You guys have added, I guess, three guys in the 2022 class, offensive linemen. How much are you on the same page with Mel about just building the team from the inside out?
Oh, we're definitely on the same page. You know, we know that, you know, you need every position, but you got to have those guys up front. You know, he knows it starts in the trenches on both sides of the ball. You know, we have a blueprint that we both agree about with. You know, we like to have big guys. You know, we like guys that are athletic. So it's good when you're working with somebody that you kind of see eye to eye with. And when we're recruiting guys and we're evaluating them, you know, for the most part, we're on the same page. So I really, you know, and it helps there too because he understands how important it is. So, you know, he's not a head coach that just recruits quarterbacks. You know, he's in there recruiting those old linemen as well and those families. And so I think those kids and parents can tell that the head coach, you know, it's important to him, that he understands the value of those linemen and that makes my job even easier. So I feel like we got a lot to sell here at Michigan State, and I can't wait till we can actually get kids on campus. But we're definitely see eye to eye in what we want to do there.
Yeah, and how long do you think the process usually is to kind of build an offensive line to where it is? I mean, obviously, you guys were challenged last year with all the stuff that you dealt with. But to get to that point where things are kind of, where you want them, how long does that process usually take?
Well, that's a good question, because you want it to happen now. I want it to happen now. I want it to happen this season. You know, there's not a day in my life that I feel like it's okay because we got time to get these guys better. It's got to happen now. So, I coach that sense of urgency, and I want our guys to train that way. I know if you took a blueprint of a freshman coming in, very few freshmen O linemen can play as freshmen. Occasionally it happens, but when you get to a point where you have some depth, you can bring a kid in and redshirt him, and then he plays as a redshirt freshman, and then he's a starter for 3 years. That would be a successful journey to me for an offensive lineman. But, the reason you bring in a transfer, you're trying to make sure we're ready to go this fall. And I feel like with the guys that are coming back and some pieces we have coming in, that we should be in a much higher level than we were last year. So my time frame is today. We got to get it done. We got to get better tomorrow in practice and go from there.
Thank you.
You bet.
Next question is from Audrey Dahlgren.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for doing this. I'm glad that you kind of brought up Ethan a little bit, just in a sense, because you want him to work on the fundamentals, as you were mentioning. But how has his progression been since he's got on campus? And then what do you want to see from him by the time spring ball is over with?
So when we first got here, he was the only person that I saw, only recruit I've seen in person since I've been here. Matter of fact, he came the morning of the 12th, and that afternoon's when we shut everything down. So I got a chance to see him. Our concern at that time was you saw this long, thin frame that was pretty athletic. I haven't watched his basketball tape. And you're like, can this guy carry the weight? Does he have a big enough frame? And that's something you really want to see in person. He came in that day, and I think he weighed like 263. So you're like, okay, we can build that up. Well, I think after he was here a month, he was 328. So putting the weight on was not an issue for him, obviously. In fact, we're pulling him back a little bit. That's the problem with the dorm and the cafeteria being connected. He's got the world's biggest kitchen. So, he can't keep going back for seconds and thirds. But, I joke around with him, but he's a great kid. He wants to be a good player, unbelievable attitude. And he's got good feet. He can bend. And sometimes he looks awkward as can be because he's trying to learn what I want. But it's always amazing how he gets there. And, and that's not the same for all kids. So as a staff, we're really excited about what he's going to become, because he's a big, long human. I mean, when you get those tackles that are 6'7", 325, you'll see him even in the NFL, where technically they're not as where you quite want them, but it's hard for people to run around them and through them. So we're excited about him because he does have the athleticism, and I think he's going to be a really good player for us. So my hopes are, at the end of this spring ball, he understands our offense. He understands the techniques I want, and then he can take what he's learned from the spring and improve for the summer, and then he can laugh at all the other freshmen that come in that summer and are trying to figure it out.
Thank you.
You bet.
We have time for a couple more. We'll go back to Chris Solari.
Chris, in your role as the run game coordinator, I mean, obviously you brought in Jared, but you also brought in running back Kenneth Walker. Excuse me. What have you seen early with him, and what did you see on his tape that makes him fit the blocking schemes you guys want to do and the type of downhill running you need?
Right. Well, first of all, Kenneth, again, great, great kid. He's come in here and the team loves him. And, again, we haven't had a scrimmage yet. We run plays against each other, but there's no disappointment, I can tell you that. And it's not just notice from us, it's notice from his teammates. He can go, he's got vision, he can cut, he can put his, head down and get those tough yards that we think just from watching his film from Wake Forest. I think from watching his film at Wake Forest, the one thing you saw in a short season, he scored 12 touchdowns. you know, and they're obviously he can get to the end zone. He understands that. He played a little wildcat quarterback for them, which was just showed, you know, something about him there, even just mentally to be able to line up and handle that, you know, and just talking to people around that area, what they felt, the people at that school loved him. But you saw from him on film that he had the patience for the zone game, and he had the vision to get to the right spots. But he also, you're seeing him against good competition. When he breaks free, he's outrunning people as well.
All right, again, that was assistant head coach, offensive line coach, and run game coordinator. That's right, he holds three titles. Chris Kapilovic giving his thoughts on Michigan State football as they prepare throughout spring practice. And again, the spring game is later on this month. Again, I still have no word on, I think, especially with Michigan becoming now the epicenter of the coronavirus, we'll have to just wait and see. But I don't have any word just yet on what's going to happen with fans showing up at Spartan Stadium, if they're going to be fans at all. But again, the spring game is scheduled for April 24th at Spartan Stadium. So when I get word on that, you guys will know it. You'll hear it on Morning Edition and All Things Considered, but I just don't have any word on that just yet, okay? So, yeah, all right, let's hit our final break, and when we come back, I want to put a bow on Tuesday's Current Sports by giving a salute to a longtime Tom Izzo assistant coach for the Michigan State men's basketball program who has decided to move on in his career from East Lansing. We'll put a bow with that conversation. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and I just want to bring you all on home by touching upon some news that is some pretty big news, especially when talking about Michigan State basketball. As Dane Fife, he is leaving his home state to return to his alma mater. Dane Fife, assistant coach under Tom Izzo, on Monday, he accepted a similar position with Indiana under new head coach Mike Woodson. And I saw the news came out today that he's going to be making around like $375K annually. So yeah, man. Dane Fife returning to Indiana to coach under Mike Woodson, who, you know, Mike Woodson, you know, he's had quite the basketball career. You know, I know Mike primarily from watching him coach in the NBA. He was also a player in the NBA as well, but, you know, he's coached as an assistant with the Milwaukee Bucks, Cleveland Cavaliers, Philadelphia 76ers. He was also, if you remember, an assistant coach for the Detroit Pistons. Do you remember that, right? Like you know, when the Pistons won the championship in 04, he was a part of putting that together, man. He was an assistant from 03 to 04. And then, you know, he became a coach for the Hawks, the Knicks. He's been around the NBA, man. He's been around the NBA. So this will actually be his very first stint as a collegiate basketball coach, coaching Indiana, and he has plucked Dane Fife again from Michigan State. So Fife said in a statement, Fife, who was 41 years old, quote, "To be an Indiana Hoosier, as I've always said, was my dream as a little boy growing up in Clarkston, Michigan. Now, once more, I'm going to be a Hoosier. Michigan State will forever hold a place in my heart as one of the greatest experiences of my life. My family and I are forever grateful for the love and support shown to us by the Spartan community." So congratulations to Dane. Woodson, on the hiring of Dane, said, quote, "Dane is someone who I have always had the utmost respect for. His knowledge of the Big Ten and his success as a recruiter will be an invaluable asset as we look to continue building a staff that will help elevate this program to the highest levels." So pretty awesome stuff. And now Coach Izzo, you know, has a vacancy on his coaching staff that he's going to try and fill. But, you know, my interactions with Dane, Dane has always been so down to earth. And, you know, when I first got hired at WKAR and was regularly going out to the practices and covering the team, you know, Dane would always come over and say hello, and he was just always down to earth, man. Just always down to earth and always, you know, giving me a fist bump or a high five and saying hello. Just a really good guy, and wishing him nothing but the best over at Indiana. All right, folks, that will do it for this Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. We'll see you on the hump day edition of the show as we now take a 23-hour break. I want you all to please be smart, be safe, and as always, be easy, people.